welcome to the main stage, Mark Whitney with Amentum, who will be moderating our opening keynote presentation from Scott Papano. So ladies and gentlemen, a big round of applause for our opening session.
This is great. So I think you promised us yesterday that these tables and chairs would be full. I thought maybe you'd just kind of take some of the tables out, move the tables spread them apart to make it look like more people are here, but folks showed up. So thank you all for really dealing with the weather and making it here. My name is Mark Whitney. I'm the president of Energy and Environment at Amentum. And I am very honored to host our esteemed guest here, Scott Papano, a key leader, of course, in the National Nuclear Security Administration, as he discusses some important topics, modernization, projects, contracts, approaches. But first, let me introduce Admiral Scott Papano, who is the Principal Deputy Administrator of the National Nuclear Security Administration. He was confirmed on September 18th last year. And sworn in shortly thereafter, after serving a distinguished 35-year career in the United States Navy as a submarine officer and an acquisition leader. He retired as Vice Admiral in May of 2025. His list of accomplishments and accolades and important positions, way too long for this morning. We only have 40 minutes. That is available, NSA website, obviously, conference material, and the Google machine. Today we are going to explore five key areas with the Admiral. I think probably things, topics that are top of mind for everybody in this room. Modernization of the weapons program, of course. The culture of urgency in NSA. Major capital projects. And some of the challenges and opportunities associated with them across the complex. Contracting strategies, potentially some new approaches that we're going to do this morning, and NSA's role in advancing and supporting the broader administration and DOE goals. If you know the Admiral, I think we can all expect this to be a candid, informative, and very much a solution-focused session. So I want to thank you again, Admiral, for joining us, taking time out of your busy day to share your perspectives on these topics.
Thanks for having me.
First area, modernization of the weapons program. Of course, that's going to be the first topic, right? Scott, in your October 17th memo, you highlighted the need for bold thinking and bold planning and dramatic action to address many of the challenges that we're currently facing, infrastructure challenges, operating challenges, just the current mission needs, right, the ability to meet those. You outlined some really big goals and objectives and aggressive timeline to get into that streamlined operating model. At its core, though, I think you talked about this in your confirmation hearing, that it's really about the transition, right, transition to a production mindset. And so first question is simply, how do we transition from a science-based stockpile mindset to a production modernization mindset without losing the important science that's crucial to the mission?
Yeah, thanks for that, Mark, and thanks to the Nuclear Deterrent Summit team for having me here today. It's great to see a great turnout here. Wasn't sure how many people were going to be in chairs today with the at least day two of Snowmageddon 26 here. So, thanks for braving the weather and being out here to hear what I have to say. It's a good opportunity. I relish the opportunity to kind of give you a view into my mind about how I'm approaching things. And so a little background to get to where we are. The way this team is set up and what I bring to the table, you're going to hear from the administrator later today. He is really about setting the policy, setting the vision, the drive for what we're going to do. And he has laid out, as you suggested, Mark, as we shift to this production-based organization to build, the weapons that deter our enemies. So that's our primary focus. what I bring to the table, and you know, he and I have a long conversation about this, is I'm here to execute his vision. That's the bottom line, right? So I'm the guy that's going to go figure out, working with the team, how do we go drive, how do we go execute that? Because what I fundamentally, you know, what I bring to the table is operating in a government, large government organization, and understanding how we can make that organization function to go drive the policy objectives and meet the administration priorities that we're looking to meet. That is going to be driving for production is our key method there. But, you know, if we look back over time, how we got here, you know, certainly we can't abandon that. We have to be able to shift to a production mindset without losing the science. As a matter of fact, by benefiting from the science that we've done. Now, if we look historically at how we got to this point, right, you know, the wall came down, you know, we ended the Cold War, and then we all kind of cashed in the peace dividend across, you know, our program, the Nuclear Weapons Enterprise, and across DOD, you know, then lo and behold, after 20 years of a land war in Asia, we found ourselves in a completely different operating environment. I said, well, we have to do something about that, you know. And frankly, the Cold War was the easy part, right? Just mano a mano, you know, two great powers, nuclear arm, you know, some, you know, view of, you know, mutually assured destruction that kind of kept the world in order. Yes, there were proxy wars and there were other things, but, you know, the overwhelming threat and the direct communications prevented us from getting nuclear exchanges, right? That's a different world than we see today, where we see multi, you know, at least three great powers, nuclear armed, lots more state and non-state actors, much more complex problem, which is why the urgency of what we have to go do. Right? We are closer to nuclear exchange, which we ultimately want to prevent, but we are closer today than we've ever been in the Cold War, my view, right? That's what drives urgency for us today. And then now we look at that, we take all the years that we have of the science-based stockpile stewardship, right? That was critically important, right? Our plan had been to kind of gracefully let the stockpile age out, right? Make sure it was safe, reliable, and effective until we didn't need it anymore. And now we find ourselves that we have to go need it. Not unlike what we did in my other background in shipbuilding in those areas, right? And so now we are at this inflection point where it's a strategic national imperative that we recapitalize this using what we know from the science base and then leveraging additional tools that we need to get after this thing. Now that means, you know, bringing innovation, that means bringing, you know, how do we use that science-based technology, how to advance what we're doing in the production side of things, what infrastructure I have to build out, how do I drive redundancy, capability, capacity, to deliver the weapons that we need to do now and into the future, and having both those views in mind, right? Not going, you know, making sure that we're making decisions based on what we have to do today to deliver to the program of record, support the Department of War, but also we have to do for the future so that no future presidents will have to face the dilemma of, can I do this or not? We want to make sure we have that flexibility, agility, you know, and responsiveness to be able to go do what we need to do. And so the time is now. Right, that's what drives the urgency we have to get after this. So I think that answers that question, Mark, unless you have any follow-ups there.
No, that was great. We had a great panel session yesterday with your field office managers, who evidently travel in the back over there. But they talked a little bit about this and what's going on in the sites to really help support the transition and get to a more efficient way. You know, a lot of it was about, you know, managing risk, not avoiding risk. It was about, you know, accelerated and agile decision making, and it was about, you know, kind of eliminating lower value added, you know, activities. It was also some discussion about technology as a key aid, where you've also noted the need to incorporate technology and commercial capability, including advanced manufacturing. I've heard you talk about that to help with the transition. Anything you'd like to share with us about what you're considering in terms of leveraging technology, whether it's data analytics, AI, you name it, to support the transition and help inform decision making?
I think it's all of the above in one, Mark. And I frankly, I'm not the smartest guy to know about what all the answers are. And so, you know, we do have the best and brightest in our labs, plants, and sites. And so leveraging their know-how, their, what they've done with the science-based, you know, stockpile stewardship, they're going to be positioned to kind of help me out to go after that, right? But in general, you mentioned some of them, right? In the production thing, it's easy, right? I got, just like I would do in other parts of the manufacturing world, whether that's in shipbuilding, defense production, or general production and manufacturing in the United States, how do we drive, advanced manufacturing capabilities? indoor things to make things better, smarter, faster, and because we're kind of a low volume producer and it's well suited for advanced manufacturing. How do I bring robotics to the table? Right? And so, if I can introduce robotics, especially where I'm, human limited, like think about, where dose rates might be an issue and my wrench time is governed by the amount of time that I can spend in a glove box. If I can automate that, if I can drive automation robotics and go do that, that's a great opportunity for us. And so that's something we want to certainly go after. And everybody also likes to talk about AI, right? So as we look at the artificial intelligence as a broader department administration goal, we're all in on that, right? And it fits our model very, very well. Again, a couple of things I look at in the artificial intelligence area is how do I go maximize my resources to go innovate or iterate on new weapons designs, right? Where I can go use AI to kind of drive an iterative solution and then let my high power computing go validate or not validate that, right? And so marshal the high power computing resources by doing some upfront work, for example, with new weapons designs to bring greater capabilities to bear. Things like, hey, how do I go figure out different material properties that I can go engineer that meet my needs? Because we find ourselves, a lot of times materials we had, in the 1950s and 60s that were easy to work with at the time because we didn't know how bad they were in some cases, and the restrictions that are on some of those materials right now. How do I get replacement materials? What can I learn from AI to go do that? And so how do I do, and even at the simplest level, how do I bring AI to bear for, our logistics functions, right? How I do manufacturing a facility, how I communicate between facilities with a digital backbone where I can identify, what the process, choke points are to either change the process or drive investment in something else. Those are all great opportunities as far as I'm concerned to kind of leverage technology. That I'm sure that is just the tip of the iceberg that I will lean on, the experts on our team to go figure out what else I need to go do here.
You did pretty good for a non-expert talking about that. Obviously, the environment that we all work in is information security is critical, right? And appreciate your thoughts. I think in the past we've kind of paired on the side of pushing the easy button on things like AI. It's too hard, it compromises security. Any thoughts you have on that topic? How do we do this without compromising security?
Well, yeah, we do actually, it's very important to us, as you know, right, for obvious reasons that we don't need to rehash here. Certainly, we can't dismiss something because we think it's too hard, right? Again, there's technology there. How do I firewall this capability? How do I direct point-to-point communications? How do I guard this? And a lot of times we'll be able to lean on the commercial, and other government agencies that are working in this realm. That's what we have to go do. We have to go figure it out and how to do it. And, in general, one of the mantras that we've had, with the administrator and I to help drive a sense of urgency is, nobody gets to say no except the administrator, right? You get to say yes, but. Okay, and so you can drive and say, okay, yes, but these are the risks. Okay, here's what we're doing to mitigate those risks. Are those adequate, not adequate? Right? That's what we have to have the mindset to go do and say, hey, to leverage this capability to go after these kind of tools, understand what the risks are, answer the yes, buts, and figure out what we're going to do about it, and then determine whether that risk is worth taking. Because ultimately, the risk of mission failure is bigger than any other risk that we have in the enterprise.
Yeah, great. Yeah, thank you. Let's shift gears here, only slightly, because this is a very much related topic. That's the culture of urgency that you and the administrator are trying to create in NSA. And somewhat ironically, it's this sense of urgency that permeated the Manhattan Project and led to the creation of some amazing infrastructure that helped us win the war. This very infrastructure is in need of massive recapitalization, right, and investment, and requires probably a revived sense of that urgency. So what are your general thoughts on urgency and what you and the administrator are trying to achieve, and how do you cultivate that across the programs, the sites, the offices, organizations? Is there anything that the folks in this room can do to help?
I think part of that is what I alluded to very briefly at the beginning, and the administrator, I'm sure, will expound upon, is first of all, getting the message out, right? Making sure and that we are fully aligned. Hey, I believe that message. Even a gathering like this is an opportunity for you know, everybody here to kind of hear where my head is at, where the administrator's head is at, to understand that, hey, why do you think this is an urgent issue, and, you know, that we believe in it, and then, you know, convince you of the same kind of thing. And then it's about going after it in you know, promulgating that down to the labs, plants, and sites, to the field office managers, through the headquarters workforce, right? And then driving, you know, how we're going to do business based on the ability to go urgently deliver these things. Hey, so first of all, I have to listen to what the ideas are about what to go after, and then, you know, incentivize or disincentivize based on people's ability to go deliver that, align accountability and authority at all levels, push that as best I can down, so that we can drive that sense of urgency. And I always talk about, you know, with my team, you know, looking at what the big R, little R requirements, what's in the way of what we're doing. Part of that's how we're gonna do contracting better and more effectively, but that also helps drive urgency, right? I wanna understand what the barriers to urgency are. And some, usually, in many cases, you know, the government tends to be its own worst enemy here. By over the years, I have layered on these kind of things. Hey, we all recognize that we're in a high consequence, you know, business that we're in, and right, so the natural tendency in a high consequence business is to take additional requirements that provide more safety, security, you know, those kind of things, right, which ultimately can slow down production and capability and capacity to do the work. You know, I said the way I look at it is, you know, I come from the Navy, the ship is safe as it's a port, but, you know, it can't do its mission while it's in port, right? So what are those things that every little bit along the way, you know, if we're looking under kind of, you know, constraints analysis, that I could go remove to drive this emergency and start delivering on those things, right? So as we get something that we pluck and say, hey, you know, this is in our way of getting production done more quickly, more efficiently, those kind of things, like how do I remove that? A couple of good examples of that, we've already moved out, you know, with the defense programs team and our 70 team about looking at, you know, how we do the material control and accountability. Hey, do we have the right level of, or right frequency of audits that we're doing there? And it turns out, yeah, we can back off that a little bit, understand what the risks are, figure out what we're gonna go do with those things, buy back weeks of production time, simply by changing a little R process requirement, right? And so, and there's a host of things along that line as well. You know, how do I do things inside the building, right? How do I, you know, I can look at, you know, DOE 413, you know, about how, what are all the steps along the way that are eating time, and then work through my chain of command to go figure out how do I go remove these things, how do I do this better, smarter, faster, because everything I can remove something from helps drive that sense of urgency, right? And if we start delivering those small wins, right, then those will tend to, in my opinion and kind of experience, is that they'll start to snowball effect, right? People will see that, hey, people are getting stuff out of our way to do this more effectively, more efficiently, and then more ideas will come about how to do this better, right? And a lot of times that's just through process. And then the big R requirements is, do we have those right? Am I over, like, on the requirements for what I have to go deliver? Do I have that right? Let's go take a look at that. Do I really need all this capability, or do I just need some of this capability and move some to the commercial sector, right? Those are the kind of things that we're looking at, Mark, to try to, you know, get the most out of the capacity that we have, right? Because, again, I think I can return a lot just by doing that kind of analysis.
Yeah, that's great. And that momentum that you talked about is so important, right? Because that's what, it can be powerful, because that's what drives culture at the end of the day. You will have skeptics, right? Skeptics.
Absolutely. It'll be the first time in my career.
They'd say that urgency will lead to potentially unintended consequences when it comes to safety. How would you address this?
So, again, none of this is about, you know, I don't mean to be cavalier or sound cavalier, right? You know, again, we talked about it. It is a high consequence business. And so we have to make sure that, you know, we are analyzing those risks as we go through them. And there's a chance that we don't, you know, if there's, you know, we swing the pendulum too far, right? The bottom line is, I'm never going to get the people in the field to go do what I need them to be empowered to go do, unless they have top cover, you know, at my administrator's level, right? So part of that is reinforcing that top cover to go do that, understanding that we're going to take some risk. We want to make sure we're fully informed, and that, by the way, is how I do business, right? There's, I don't like autocratically rule on these kind of things, right? My methods, just for everybody to understand, is I very much want to get everybody in the room. I want to have my opinions challenged. I want to make the most, you know, information-rich decisions that we can understand where the risks are, how we're mitigating those risks, and how we move forward. Is there a chance that we get something wrong? Yes, there's always a chance to get something wrong, right? But we have to go into that open-eyed, you know, protecting the people, making sure it is, you know, why it's easy for people at lower levels to say no is because they figure that they don't have a cap cutter. But I talked at the beginning about the key to all of this is lining, you know, authority with accountability, right? And so, and again, sometimes I'm going to push that authority and accountability down as we make some of these other decisions, right? You know, we'll at least provide top cover to provide that authority and accountability if we have to go do that, if there's some reticence to go do it. And then as we start doing that, we go figure it out. But again, it's never about, you know, not taking risks. We just have to have a different relationship with risk, understand what the consequences are, how we're mitigating those consequences so that we can move out smart.
Oh, that's great. Just back to the culture of urgency, it's very much related, the way I see it, to your drive to streamline the operating model, right? But the mission doesn't stop, right? And it's not going to wait for the change that you're working on, changes you're making already. So do you have things in place right now, very limited time that you've been in your role, that give you visibility into where things like bottlenecks are, and ability to address those as you're going through and making larger structural
changes? That's a great question. You know, short run time here, but certainly, you know, you can kind of see some of that. Most of that has been focused strategically, where, hey, where are my long-term big things about recapitalizing infrastructure? You know, what's going to bite me next week? You know, we talk about your production, we talk about high explosives. Other things that in the future we have to make sure we get right at a strategic level. That's been the principal focus. But we have at least had a view. I'm starting to get out to labs, plants, and sites right now. The team is starting to get out to labs, plants, and sites to go see that, about where we are, make those assessments. Very important how we go do that. I rely a lot on the either field office managers or the lab, plant, site leadership from the M&Os. You know, any one of them should feel they can reach out to me directly at any time, right, to go identify these kind of things. And so I think I'm approachable. I can look mean and sound mean, but I'm really soft the inside. Don't say anything, Jenna. Keep your mouth shut. Okay, yeah, all right, nothing. So first of all, that's an opportunity there. I want everybody to understand I am open, you know, for business. I want to hear those kind of things. That being said, you know, we have seen some of those things, where those choke points are, where they are. It's either going to be driven, as I suggested, by process change to help solve that, or infrastructure or investment change, those kind of things. To help do that and have that like view of what we're going to be doing and where identifying where those choke points are, to help drive decision makers. The administrator and I and the team are also embarking on building out essentially a nuclear weapons enterprise model to understand, hey, where are all the, you know, where are all the steps done, and start from the top down, work our way down at the very highest level, and then kind of work our way down into individual labs, plants, and sites to identify, using theory constraints, where our most limiting components are, where we get the biggest bang for the buck, return on investment. You know, is it, you know, no cost? Is it something I have to invest in? What is it that I have to go do to go break through that choke point? So very much driving for that right now. That's in the station stages right now. So very much relying on field leadership to give us that right now. But we want to enable that to go forward. Eventually, we want to get to the point where we build out a digital backbone and there's more direct communications with all the labs, plants, and sites. That's also on the agenda, to make sure I have the ability to then, that itself will help eliminate some choke points, I think, but also allow us to identify the interrelationships of the labs, plants, and sites, and what I have to go after to identify choke points and eliminate them.
Thank you. In addition to the aging facilities and the massive infrastructure investments that are required, you have a range of very important, very big, new ongoing capital projects in the complex right now, critical to the nuclear deterrent, for SRPPF, the advanced processing facility, PF, to name a few, a big few.
Yeah.
Your thoughts right now on those projects, and you know, kind of which projects are you thinking about the most right now, and any perspective you can share with us?
I care about everything, but you've kind of hit like the high points, right? So again, to give you a view into my mind's eye, right? You know, my journey has started by looking. You know, you can't get to this job without hearing about pit production, right? But you know, pit production is only one piece of the puzzle. I'll step through them here in a second, right? But it's then what else is going to get us after that? So my initial journey is focused on, hey, the pre-production at PF4 out of Los Alamos, and eventually at Savannah River, you know, there's the next phase of doing that. Looking at the other major lines like the uranium line with UPF and how that's going. We'll talk about that here in a second. You know, lithium is another challenge line right now. Those big four things are what I'm driving for most urgently. And there's going to be a couple other things I've mentioned out in the outliers that could be other things that we look at. Things like high explosives that we're going after, mitigating, but what do we need to go do to get after that, right? So let's step through those real quick. So at Los Alamos, the pit production out there, the mission for me, right, is to how do I, you know, right now we're doing a little bit of, we had some fits and starts before I got here about getting to where we are right now, but after we re-baseline the PF4 work right now, I'm pretty happy with how that's going right now, performing, you know, at a 0.98, 0.9 CPI, SPI right there. So great work by the team out there, and it's a challenge because you're kind of building the airplane while you're flying, right? Because we're still trying to drive the pit production out at Lanham right now, while we're going out, you know, removing equipment, putting new equipment in, you know, figuring out what the discoveries along the way. But all in all, I think that's going pretty well. Could that go a lot better? Yes. There's opportunities that we're looking at right now. As a matter of fact, Dave Beck, who you can corner sometime later, you know, is with us today, at least for a little while. You know, our new defense programs lead, who finally got confirmed here, he was out at Los Alamos last week with team experts to kind of do HIF assessment. And I need Dave to do that work, right? And we'll talk about how I can help to go do that. But as we look at, you know, doing both the production and the recapitalization there, that's the balance we have to go do. But hey, let's take the short and long view here, is we want to make sure we're capitalizing on driving the, you know, the recap work now, because now's a window where we're not pressurized on pit production for the program record right this minute, but we will be in the near future. So make sure we get the capacity built out, the capability built out. And so what Dave's team is looking at is with, you know, across the last plants and sites, people who have experience with this, is making sure that, hey, are we doing the best we can do right there? What other opportunities on that line can we do differently to maximize throughput? Where are the tactical choke points to go after in that production line? How do I go for the future that maximize that? Things like what other work is going on in PF4 that maybe I can move out of PF4 and expand my capability capacity in PF4 to get, you know, 30 plus, 60 plus, 100 pits? Whatever the goal is, I'll work with Dave's team on that to go figure out what that is. Figure out what the barriers are to doing that. Go drive that at PF4. Right, that is our one capability. That's where we're making picks right now. We want to make sure we, you know, exploit that to the best of our ability, set it up for how we're going to do business in the long run there to make sure we can maximize pit production coming out of there. If I go, you know, I'm certainly committed to the two-site solution on pits. Right, so that brings us then to SRPPF, down in Savannah River. That is certainly something we have to get after right now. And so, you know, as we get, you know, my initial goal was, okay, have we made the right decisions? What were the framing assumptions that we did? We looked at the Savannah River site to go convert the MOX facility to SRPPF. I understand why we made those decisions, but frankly, some of those framing assumptions have changed. We have to evaluate what we're going to be doing in Savannah River in pit production. In the very near term, how do I continue to push production and construction out there, right, to get the Savannah River where I need it to be? We'll talk a little bit about that when I think we get to contracting. But also, what can Savannah River do in a, you know, in a supporting role for Lanham, right? Is there something I can do at Savannah River before I'm on, you know, full-time capacity, you know, in the late 35-ish timeframe? You know, what can I do between now and 2035 to be supporting, you know, production of pits at Lanham until I get that point? Could it be training? Could it be some front-end production of plutonium? Could it be some, what is it that I can go after that out of Savannah River going to do that? And ultimately, it's going to be to go figure out how to go deliver that project as expeditiously as possible and make sure we do it at the right cost to the nation needs right now. I frankly did look at the framing assumptions for that, you know, and I challenged my team about, you know, whether we should go to Greenfield or stick with MOX. You know, right now, you know, I'm convinced that the sticking with MOX right now conversion is the right way to go. But we'll continue to evaluate those as we go along, because I don't want to restart the whole process where we can kind of backtrack on what we've done right now. If I was going to build a much bigger facility, Greenfield might be the answer, right? So I got to look at how those framing assumptions evolve with pit production and what we need to go do and what we can get out of PF4, when we need some red river online. Those will all be part of that decision, you know, calculus. As I look at the UPF line, again, some fits and starts earlier on, I think we're getting better performance on the UPF construction right now. So I'm very much, challenging the team. I want to, they're already looking to beat their schedule for when we would actually commission UPF, to the point where we're bringing other people about with expertise on, commissioning these kind of, this capability and infrastructure. Team recently met down there in Oak Ridge about, hey, how do we go do that? What are all the lessons that we've had from other commissionings of, so we can apply those to UPF? What lessons have we learned? What should we do differently? What have we done outside the enterprise? How would somebody else go do this? How would a commercial builder go do these kind of things? So very much driving that to deliver early. The team down there knows that I want even earlier capability. Like, I want to pull a year early and go demonstrate some capability at UPF. And so we're working the details of that right now. And show me that we can, before final commissioning, show me you can, do some castings down there. That'll be one of my priorities, go drive that. So we're going to find out what that takes, what the barriers are to do with that, so that I can go demonstrate our ability to move in urgency, demonstrate capability both to our adversaries and allies, and make sure that they understand that we're back in business here as part of that. And then lithium's a great example, I think, about, to get a view of how I think about some of these things. Right now we find ourselves with, kind of this big box design for the lithium production facility. That's essentially cost way more than we wanted to and is linked to the need, right? And this is one of those examples where I think, driving where can I build redundancy and capacity the most quickly is if I can go turn into a commercial center. And I'm challenging the team to do that right now as a mitigation where we are for right now to kind of, with the condition of beta 2 and what, the risks that are there for lithium production. How do I mitigate those risks in the very, very near term? And I believe that the commercial industry can do that for me. This is not nuclear. This is, it's lithium, right? It's a chemical producer. We have people that work with chemicals in the commercial industry. My team's out working with those teams right now to go figure out who can do this, where we're going to do it, and start driving that capability. I'm not going to not do lithium at Oak Ridge, right? That's a center of excellence. That's where my expertise lies, right? We are going to build out that capability there over time. We're probably going to think about doing that more modularly, right? How do I go start with doing some, potentially some lithium research and development activities down there in a smaller scale facility that could do very low rate stuff, much smaller cost, and produce if I really, really needed it for kind of onesie, twosie kind of things as I build out the full capability, but certainly go to the commercial sector and what they can do with lithium, both on the front end, processing, and that's where we'll start. But I want to go look at the fabrication as well, right? So again, this is a chemical, function that we can do outside of, I believe, outside of lab plants and sites as well. We're still going to do it there, but if I can go drive dual sources of this thing, build redundancy and capacity, that's a win for the nuclear weapons enterprise. It's a win for the nation, across a couple of fronts there, just manufacturing in general. And we would look for other opportunities like that, right? So if anybody has ideas, you want to come pitch to me, let me know. I'm all ears. I'll stop there, I think.
That's good, yeah. Told you this would be candid and informative.
I have nothing if not candid, okay?
So thank you for that. So maybe just step back, one quick follow-up on that. We heard yesterday during the first day, a lot of discussion about collaboration and partnerships, right? And how important that is to drive to the transition, the new operating model, and because it's all about communication, right? It's about getting on the same page. Are there any collaborations or partnerships that you think are especially important right now?
I think in general, which is what I talked about with, hey, where can I leverage commercial capability capacity, right? And so develop that. To me, that is a partnership of sorts, right? It's really a risk mitigation. It's building second sources. But we're also looking at very innovative things, right? Some of that's already going on. If you look at what we're doing with KC Next and kind of how we're doing things differently with potentially real estate transactions, you know, as far as getting after things in the public-private partnership kind of world, right? Good success story out of KCNX right now. Where else can we model that or something else like that? But certainly other capabilities out there, right? Things that we haven't fully leveraged, right? And things that, some of my Navy experience, taught me that we can do things differently, right? That we have to go, work the issues across the interagency and make sure that everybody understands what we're doing, and the Hills for that matter, make sure they understand what things are going on. But where are these other PPP kind of ventures that we can go lean into, right? And a lot of that small-scale stuff's going on at times right now, but I think there's other opportunities out there where a little bit of government seed money, whether that is something like to go drive after an infrastructure fund, working on government land, those kind of things. You're seeing some of that in other areas that we're dealing with kind of AI data centers and power associated with it, right? Those kind of opportunities where we can bring that to bear, working with what can the government offer? What does the government get back? What does the offerer and whatever we're doing get out of that, right? And how does that drive towards a broader department and national administration priorities? Those are all things that we're looking at. And frankly, sometimes it might even be, we've had some discussions about, ultimately it's about capital, right? Does the capital come from government investment? We very much think in like this, we get used to only, using appropriated money to do that, right? How do I use appropriated money to bring other ability to raise capital in the private sector, right, to go drive the investment that I need to go do, right? I'm looking for those kind of opportunities. It could be what I talked about with the infrastructure funds. It could be by driving things like offtakes and those kind of things for the future. I won't go too much detail there, but I understand the value of capital. I understand the need to, for the government to signal with capital, right? But ultimately, I want the commercial enterprises to help me raise their own capital, right? And then let's work together on how that is. Again, I'm all ears on ideas on that may fall out.
Great, thank you. Well, let's transition to a topic that I know everyone's interested to hear about, that's contracting and potential new contracting approaches that you're considering, given that NSA's really your prime mechanism for affecting a lot of change and achieving a lot of things that you've talked about this morning is through your prime contracts. Are you considering contracting differently? If so, can you share a little bit with us?
I'm absolutely considering contracting differently, all right? So, but before I scare everybody away, right? Yes, everything that I've talked about is kind of maybe a different approach to how we do things, right? So, again, into my mind's eye about how I view these things, and a confession too, right? So the world I came from, in shipbuilding and defense procurement was very much a fee-driven kind of contracting relationship, right? You want me to do more stuff, I want, I'm gonna value the fee that comes out of that. And the leadership from the lab, plants and sites talked to me, we had a small group, and they made it clear that, yeah, that's part of the puzzle, Scott. There's other things, like, hey, extending contracts, that's very valuable to us, right? So, it regardless of what all those things are, it's my job to go work with the team and figure out what motivates the M&O contractors, and essentially everybody up and down the chain of command, what motivates to go incentivize, disincentivize, however you want to look at it, right? This is a potential for a win-win here. At the highest level, right, so I, just to be frank, I'm a fan of how we do the M&O contracts right now. I think that they provide, as structured, they provide the agility, the flexibility that we need to go shift course, do the things that lab plants and sites do in response to perhaps changing priorities, at the national level. Right? So I'm not looking to go fundamentally change how we do M&O contracting, structurally. Also, to be fair, I'm not a big fan of a work fee, right? To me, I've never seen a work fee very functional. Again, my contracts team and stuff in the labs, plants, and sites, kind of talk me through where that is. That's another confession. I can make a work fee work, I'm convinced. I don't have to go up to the apple cart and shift everything to, incentive fees, right? But what I will intend to do is drive out things like fixed fee. I'm okay with driving with a word fee, but I very much, as I align that accountability authority, right, it has to be objective. The more objective we can make it, the better off we are, right? I don't want it to be subjective. There's always gonna be some subjective parameters, don't get me wrong, because I want to have that as part of the relationship, the ability to flex, the ability to innovate for the last place of sites to go figure out what priorities they need to go after to support larger priorities. But the more I can drive towards, discrete objectives in award fee is what I will go after, right? So we'll see some of that coming up. And again, I'm very open about this. I want a win-win, So I've challenged the teams to tell me what motivates you, right? Don't make me guess, right? I'll probably get it wrong, right? So tell me what motivates you, right? And so that's a way to go do that on the fee side of the world right there. As we continue down that track, then I talked about, you know, all the things about the big RMR requirements. I won't rehash all that, right? But what are we getting in the way of? How can I drive to more, you know, commercial kind of things, right? Where commercial things are applicable. How can I drive that into the contracts, right? Whether that's infrastructure or otherwise, right? How do I go do that? Any of those kind of things that can save us, that drive us into emergency that we already talked about, I'd love to drive those into contracts. And then back to where I kind of mentioned briefly is, you know, understanding that our motivation is extension of contract, right? And I got it, I want to win-win. Between you and me, Mark, and everybody listening, if I don't have to do any contracts, I'm good, right? Because that just gives me bandwidth back to do other stuff. I can have my, you know, if I don't have to redo M&O contracts, I can kind of shift my contracts team to things like FedDirect contracts, where something where I don't have the bandwidth right now, I can go out to something like that. Go for rapid prototyping and rapid fielding and OTA contracts. I'm gonna do some of that anyway, right? But I gotta balance where my bandwidth is on the contract. That being said, right, understanding that, you know, contract extension is a motivation, I'm gonna ask the question, what do I get out of it? Okay, so it's nothing's for free, right? So the things that I will consider in that, working with the team, hey, how is the M&O contractor performing right now, and their plan to perform in the future? You know, hey, is there something I want, milestone driven, some objective work that is really, really important to me, the administrator of the enterprise, that I want to drive for, that when I extend that, I want to write that in. Is it something more mundane, like, hey, negotiating a fixed fee to get the contract extension? All those kind of things, right? Ultimately, it's both our benefits, right, to have stability. Maybe it is stability, right? If something key is going on, you know, with that M&O contractor in the time frame when I would extend them, right? And let's be frank, right? So we're going to talk next about Savannah River, I'm pretty sure. And the rest I'm talking to is an X3 and a Hopper, or a Y12, Sandia, and Nevada, right? So those are the teams that we'll be working with, right? I can extend all those contracts and get reap the benefits of that for both the team and for me, then we'll do that, right? Otherwise, we'll be looking to get, that will be next in the Hopper after the Savannah River site that we're already working to get out here.
Great.
I think that answers the question.
Yeah, it did. Thanks very much. And the 45 minutes in, there's a big elephant in this room, right? And you started talking about it. We have 5 minutes to talk about if what you're willing to share with the Savannah River M&O procurement upcoming and the elements that we might expect to see from our discussion that we just had.
Okay, so as everybody knows, right, that we will be competing the Savannah River site M&O. And so just for open kimono, you know, my government, you know, the contracts and the GC team said, okay, we want to know what you're going to say about this, Scott, and we're going to post a special notice immediately following your remarks. So go to the website, immediately following my remarks, you'll see the special notice, and presumably my remarks will be aligned with that, right? So the community. So that's the bottom line there. How we are doing Savannah River a little bit differently than we've done in the past, right? To try to shape thoughts on where what I want the river going there. Unlike we still have to do the M&O work down there, right? There's a ton of M&O kind of work. You know, we got to deliver tritium. We still have, you know, work with EM and the work out there. You know, surplus plutonium disposition, what we end up doing with that. We may do things differently there with how we're going to go after that. Obviously, the M&O work is very, very important there. But, you know, if I look across all the M&Os, right, and the sites, right, that is going to be driven over the next 10 years very heavily by infrastructure, right? And recapitalizing infrastructure. SLPPF, we've talked about it already, right? Based on that assessment, right, you will see in this special notice that we are going to add a technical category for technical approach and key leadership for not only the M&O side of things, but also for the infrastructure side of things. That'd be something completely different, I think, to all of you, right? But so you're going to get evaluated. Whoever offers on will get evaluated, not only on M&O, but a separate, you know, technical approach and key leadership personnel for infrastructure, you know, principally driven by the SRPPF work that has to happen down there. Okay. Additionally, my past performance in major infrastructure projects will be included as part of past performance. Okay, so hopefully that shapes thoughts about what you may, how you might want to approach this if you're looking to go offer on that. So you should see that, you see the special notice today, you know, we're pretty quickly, you know, I think we promised this quarter and we would have our FP out on the street. And so look for that coming around pretty quickly. But that's really where my head is at, and kind of doing this PPM stuff. Very different probably than what you're used to. I think you understand my reasons for doing that, right? And then now the devil's in the details behind the graphic.
Great.
I'll stop there.
Yeah, no, thank you very much. A great discussion. I mean, you hit on all the topics. I appreciate what you do for us, for the United States, for the country. Thank you for spending time with us this morning. Everyone, please give that a round of applause.
We greatly appreciate that. We're going to take a very quick minute to allow our speakers to make their way to the back of the room and get their mics off. So we're going to ask that everybody rush the stage here. Did someone pick up, I think, a pair of glasses? Did someone grab one? Okay. Okay, perfect. All right. So just give them a minute to get to the back of the room, and then we'll get started with our next speaker.